The following programming is sponsored by Doreen Taylor Music, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
What's going on?
Hey, America, what's going on? Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, setting the scene each and every week to help you guys find out what's happening in TV, movies, music, sports, the arts, and everything in between. We're so proud to be syndicated on stations coast to coast and originating right here in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia's number one talk radio station, Talk 860 WWDB. And you can always get insider access and go behind the scene on our show's official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And it's a great day to say hi to my wonderful producer. Hi, Matt Menarek.
Hi, Doreen Taylor. How you doing?
I like it. I'm very formal today. I'm calling you your full name. What's your middle name?
Thomas.
All right. Matthew Thomas Menarek. That's a little too formal, though.
Yeah, I guess. Doreen, I don't know your middle name, Taylor.
Doreen Lynn Taylor. That sounds a little too Southern for me to say. Doreen Lynn. Yeah, I know. No.
It doesn't sound too Buffalo.
It's not very Buffalo. No. I don't know what Buffalo would really sound like, though.
Canadian.
Hey. That's what it's about,
There you go. Well, you did that too well.
Oh, I grew up there, sort of. Technically, we're sort of an expansion of Canada. We just, you know, we're just going to be eaten up by them at some point, probably. Which I wouldn't mind, actually. Because you know what? I'm peeved. A lot of things.
About what?
Seriously, a lot of things that I grew up thinking and doing have been debunked. You know?
What do you mean?
I've been hearing all these things. Like, I don't understand. Like, all these things I've always been doing. Like, you know, we hear that sugar makes kids hyper. Debunked. It doesn't.
Okay, what do you mean?
It doesn't make kids hyperactive.
Then why do they get hyper when they have sugar?
I'm not 100% sure, but they said that
it is a psychological thing?
I'm wondering if it is, because I read this whole thing about it, that they've done studies, and it does not actually have the sugar hyperactivity myth. It is not. It's a myth. It actually does not make kids hyper. Now, I'm going to probably get letters or emails or whatever that's saying that it's true. But
yeah, the ones that did that study don't have kids.
That's true. Did you ever grow up where they said, don't stand by a microwave?
Oh, yeah. I've heard that a million times.
They always say it causes cancer, right? Nope. Debunked. Not true, because the cancer risks associated with the x-rays, it is not in a microwave oven. It's non-ionizing, apparently, the rays that are emitted from it. So that means it does not cause cancer. So now you can just go all, you know, balls out right in front of one.
Not literally.
Literally.
What are you cooking? Some good looking mac and cheese.
Loin pork. You know, you got a little bit. You're good, though. You know, and I think you're not supposed to go swimming right after you eat.
Yeah, I've always heard that, but I don't think anybody's ever listened to that, though.
Nope. Debunked. Because apparently it may, you know, it causes other things, but it does not cause cramps, like it said. So
I probably wouldn't do a belly flop after I eat.
I don't think I'd do a belly flop ever. But, you know, I guess that's, you know, espresso, more caffeine than coffee. Debunked.
Wait a second.
It says a shot of espresso has about the same amount of caffeine as a cup of coffee. Now, it's smaller, because espresso is always smaller, so technically it's more, condensed in that little cup, but same. You're not going to get any hyper by drinking one cup of coffee or one shot of espresso.
Well, see, per ounce, it's probably more, though. Like, if you have a 12-ounce cup of espresso, I pretty much bet that you're having more caffeine than a 12-ounce cup of whatever, regular coffee.
Maybe. Now, see, we're getting technical now, and I'm like, you know.
I mean, if they're going to get technical, we're going to get technical.
You know.
You want to debunk, we're going to rebunk.
We're going to rebunk it back, baby.
If that makes sense.
You know, peanuts are nuts. Debunked. Peanuts are not nuts.
What are they?
They are legume family.
Okay.
They're along with, like, the beans and the peas. They are actually a legume.
That kind of goes in line with the whole fruit and vegetable thing. Everything that has a seed is a fruit. So, like, a cucumber is technically a fruit because it has a seed.
Mm-hmm.
And all. But I mean, you have a cucumber, you're going to say it's a vegetable.
Mm-hmm. I like to say legume. It just sounds so fancy.
You're still on that. Okay.
All right. Shaving makes hair grow back thicker. Debunked.
Uh-oh.
I know. I'm getting into this now. I think this is going to be like a new thing. You know, shaving does not change the thickness, color, or growth rate of hair. The coarse tips left by shaving create this illusion of thickness.
I guess because it's all even.
Yeah, and you get that little, it's more coarse, so when you touch it, it gets a little more, you know, you feel it more. Because the other way, it's softer. Yeah, see, so when, you know, my mom was saying, you don't want to shave your legs too early because it'll grow back thicker. No, I'm still waiting. It's, you know, I've been doing it for a really long time.
You going to send her a screenshot of that? You're wrong.
You're wrong. Debunked. And you only use 10% of your brain. I'm sure you've heard that, right? They were only using 10% of our brain.
I only use 10% of my brain.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's debunked. You don't have to use just 10%. That's BS. Debunked. You can, brain scans have shown that no matter what someone is doing, all brain areas are active to some degree. So we're not only using 10%. I don't know what all that is. I think stupid people came up with that one.
Yeah, they're using about 5%.
Oh, man. Drinking alcohol warms the body? Debunked.
I don't know. There's a lot of people that probably disagree with that.
Well, it says the warming sensation is actually caused by the blood vessels dilating, and that drinking alcohol actually lowers the body temperature. So it's
okay,
scary.
So if you're drinking alcohol and your blood vessels are dilating because of the alcohol and you feel warmer because of that, then that means the alcohol is in a way making you feel warmer even.
But they always warn people, like at Eagles games and the football games, and it's, you know, below zero. I grew up in Buffalo, so I understand. They get drunk, and then they feel, oh, I'm so warm. They take their shirts off, and they're actually, they always warn people that you can get really, like, hypothermia because you're not. You're actually cooler because of what's going on with the way alcohol affects you. I feel like a scientist right now.
I think when you get to the point at a football game where you want to take your shirt off, I don't think you really care. I mean... Really, if you're going to take your shirt off and you know that it's 30 degrees outside, that means you had enough to drink that,
you don't care about nothing. You don't care about nothing.
I'll get the hypothermia later.
No more. And you know what? Chinese cookies? Not Chinese. Debunked.
Fortune cookies?
The fortune cookies. Don't I call them Chinese cookies?
Oh, my God.
Well, maybe Chinese cookies actually are Chinese.
Yeah.
Fortune cookies, yes. They are not Chinese. The Japanese actually introduced them to the U.S. And in China, they actually just consider that part of American culture, and they just, there's nothing Chinese about them.
Oh, so they probably make fun of us.
They do all the more. You know, it doesn't take a cookie to make fun of us. Here's your fortune. You're very unfortunate, American. Oh, I think we debunked enough today. I think I've ruined someone's life today.
Yeah.
And I have more. I have more. Maybe we should do a part two, part three of this. If we don't get enough, you know, hate mail after what we just debunked, maybe we will. We'll try more debunked.
All right, sounds good.
You've been debunked. But you know what? Let's just move on because we're not going to debunk our first guest today, our only guest today, the incredible Jeff Tate of Queensryche. Should we get to it?
Oh, let's do it.
My guest today on The Scene with Doreen is revered as one of the most skilled vocalists in the rock music genre, with hundreds of modern popular artists citing him as a major influence. Rising to fame as the former Queensryche frontman and multi-platinum selling artist in his own right, Jeff Tate is a force to be reckoned with. Selling upwards of 20 million albums, Jeff helped to create some of the most outstanding progressive rock music in history. Take a listen.
I'm
Oh, yeah. Still creating music after 35 plus years and no signs of slowing down. Award-winning singer, songwriter, and lead vocalist Jeff Tate continues to think outside the box with his new music, tour, upcoming book, and new wine label, Insania. I am ready to uncork a bottle and get into this amazing conversation with former Queensryche frontman and multi-talented musician Jeff Tate. Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. Jeff, what's going on?
Nice to be here.
Oh, boy,
listening to that intro was very, very flattering. Thank you.
Oh, every song is better than the next. And really, just I love it. You should see me out here rocking away because it's just it's great music. And it's worn really well over time. It's really, a lot of music back in that era, it did not translate well to today. And yours did.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm amazed at that, actually. It was always a long journey making a record with the band. And then, of course, later, you try to get to a place with each song where it's speaking to you personally, mm-hmm. And that was always my kind of sign that we got to that place where when that song hit that mark, we could feel it, that it was making a dent, in you. And that would mean that it was finished and ready to, be released to the world,
Yeah. You just kind of know. Do you ever have that thing where you wake up in the middle of the night and if you're humming it, it's a hit?
Yeah. Well, I get these music loops in my head where I'm just singing the same melody or the same part like over and over again. I find myself doing it, and trying to make myself stop.
It's maddening.
It is.
It's kind of like, what did they say? I don't remember. It was Schumann or whatever who went like insane because he was hearing the same thing over and over in his head. I believe that is how the story goes. Insanity. Insania. Yeah,
it can really get you. It can really get you. And even sometimes when you record the idea, it still just, sticks with you for a few days, It's a crazy thing.
It's a good thing, though. I got to tell you, the best music I've ever heard are those earworms, the ones that you just can't shake in the middle of the night. And it's like, stop. But you don't want it to stop because it's really good.
I disagree.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My Sharona.
Oh, no. So sorry, the knack.
You don't want to get that stuck in your head.
No, there have been a few. You're right. There have been a few. But I want to say that you were born as Jeffrey with a J, right? And then you changed it to Jeffrey with a G, correct?
I did, yeah.
Why did you make that change?
I don't know. I was young and silly.
Really? Really? I think it's cool, though. It is unique. Like you. You were born in Germany to both American parents. I believe I read somewhere that your father was in the Navy?
No, he's in the army.
In the army. Now, did music run in the family, or were you kind of like the black sheep?
Yeah, it kind of ran in the family. My mom was a pretty accomplished gospel singer, and my dad played clarinet in kind of like a military combo, kind of thing. It kind of ran in the family. I was encouraged to play, once I developed an interest to it, which was somewhere like 9 years old. I remember hearing that song, "Don't You Want Somebody to Love?"
Oh, yes.
Jefferson Airplane. And I said to my mom, I want to do that. Oh. I want to play music. So she showed me where the piano was in the house, which I didn't even know it was there. And I started playing piano and taking lessons. And then, it all progressed from there.
Yes. Now, how long were you overseas before your family moved back to Washington State?
Oh, not very long, really. I think just a few short years. Then my dad got restationed in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah.
You didn't join Queensryche, or was called Mob at the time, when they asked you for the first time. It took you a while to get on board.
Well, they didn't really have a band, and they didn't have any music. And the Mob, were a cover band playing local parties and keggers and things like that. And mm-hmm. that's not really what I wanted to do. I wanted to do my own music, and I wanted to work with people that were writing and making their own music, mm-hmm. And so I opted out for a while and started working with other bands and other musicians. And at some point, Chris DeGarmo, who was playing with me in the Mob came to me and said, "Hey, we wrote some songs. Would you be interested in singing on them?" Mm-hmm. And after hearing them, I really loved the direction they were going in, and thought I could contribute something to it. And so I went into the studio with them over a summer, and we recorded the first 4-song EP we ever did. It just kind of took us all kinds of places, you know. It was really our kind of our entry into the music business.
Mm-hmm. Now, in every band, there's always very different personalities, very different musical tastes. How did you all find common ground and agree on what you were going to write, record, or even sound or look like?
Oh, gosh, it's so difficult being in a band.
It's true. <Yeah. laughs>
Getting lots everybody of egos. To agree on the same thing. Yeah. And, you know, it's really admirable. You know, in Queensryche, we spent, you know, 30 years making music, and we went through ups and downs and got turned inside out a few times. And man, you know, I have to say, for 30 years, we stuck it out, and I think we created some really, really interesting music. And we went a lot of places, toured a lot of places around the world. And I'm really proud of that legacy that we left. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of bands can last that long, you mm-hmm. know, and put out as many albums as we did. It's quite an endeavor, you know, when you look back on it and you see the whole thing unfolding, and it's pretty impressive, actually, and very proud of it.
Yes. And one of those albums, Operation Mindcrime, it was groundbreaking at the time and even listed as one of Rolling Stone's top 100 metal albums of all time. But with everything going on in the world, does it seem even more relevant today than when you wrote it?
Well, people tell me that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose so. It kind of touches on, you know, classical ideas. The struggle humanity has with trying to remain a good person, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. within the context of modern life and the excesses that we indulge in sometimes. Mm. And those things are classic human condition. You know, they don't really change that much, you know, from right. generation to generation. And so perhaps that's why the story has endured. And, you know, it's a story that touches upon corruption and trying to find your way in the world and trying to fit in without fitting in, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. To become more independent. And those subjects are kind of classic as well. They speak to people from multi-generations, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I can see where people would say that the album is very relevant, you know, in the sense of the subject matter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the beginning, when you were shaping this ultimate image of your band, were you ever vetoed on something that you really, really felt strongly about? Like in the beginning, is there something you just really wanted? Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever yeah. win? Did you ever just like, you know, kind of negotiate something, or was it just like, no? Or is there like, what's your biggest regret that you really wanted, but maybe didn't get through?
Well, I kind of got my way a lot.
Good, you know? Good for you.
Yeah, and singers, you know, we're stubborn and loud, so we kind of stomp our feet till we get our way, I guess, you know.
You're the front man. You kind of, it comes with the territory. You kind of have to. They're all looking at you.
Well, yeah. It's weird being a band. There's so much diplomacy, and, you know, you have to court certain people, and especially in our band, which was a democracy, you know, everybody had an equal vote. So you had to really talk people into stuff, you know, yeah. into trying things. And we all came from very different backgrounds and different kinds of, I don't know, I'm just going to say we were all very different.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's hard to relate sometimes. I mean, maybe you have like for us, we had this kind of real success right off the top with our first EP, and it got us to a very high spot, you know, mm-hmm. and then a gold album followed after that. So we were kind of on this trajectory, you know, that, you know, most bands just dream about getting right. to this space, and we got there rather quickly. And so I think none of us really wanted to rock the boat. We saw that we had a really good combination of personalities here. We're working together really well, you know. I mean, we had a lot of, you know, disagreements on things especially, but we still managed to do it and get past the difficulties, you know. And so I think that was kind of our mindset from the early on, was that we had a good thing going. So why try to disrupt it, you know, by doing something, you know, really extreme? You right. know, let's just kind of do what we do and let our chemistry kind of develop as we go and see what happens.
Oh, and did you ever? I believe you've sold over 20 million albums worldwide. We know what songs resonated with fans and which ones garnered awards, but what project are you proudest of during your time with the band?
Well, I like everything we did, really.
Yeah. If you could pull one, though, if you were to say, like, one is the pinnacle, the thing that you just can say, you know what, that sums it all up in a nutshell.
Well, I think Empire was really can I say that? It was a pinnacle for us mm-hmm. in a sense that we'd never done an album like that before. Mm-hmm. Just a collection of songs, really. Mm-hmm. And didn't have any kind of, you know, story behind it. It wasn't a concept record. It wasn't something with a noticeable, I'm going to use the word gimmick, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like that at all. It was just the songs kind of spoke for themselves, you know. And so I'm very proud of that album. I'm also very proud of the last album we did, dedicated to Chaos. Mm. It was the first album that everybody in the band wrote on the album and contributed to it, you know.
Yeah.
And that was a wonderful feeling after 30 years to actually make a record where everybody was like, you know, adding stuff and, you know, bringing song ideas in and sticking around after hours to work on it, you know,
yeah.
rather than just, you know, doing their part and leaving and you wouldn't see them for 6 months, you know.
Everyone had their hand in the recipe, and that's good.
Yeah.
And that really probably does sum up what your whole band was about.
Yeah, it was a interesting thing, though. And this has happened, I know, to a lot of bands. We're not, you know, something special in the regards of this, but we had like three different times where our record company went out of business right as we released an album.
Oh no. The kiss of death. Oh my goodness.
It was just terrible, terrible timing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause of course, you know, you can't sell records, so you don't have any radio right. airplay. You have nothing going on. You
right.
just have this signal at the end of the telephone, you know, nobody's answering.
So what do you do in those circumstances? How do you find your way through? I mean, obviously you went plowed through and you found success and success and success, but how do you get over that? And then not just once, but three times.
It's so difficult. especially, well, it's a financial hit like you wouldn't believe.
Yes.
You know, because you go into debt making these records, and then through touring and record sales, you get yourself out of debt and
right.
you get up enough cash to do another record, another project, you know?
Mm.
So it kind of works together like that. And without having the record sales, and then of course the tour support and all that goes with that, you know, you're just dead in the water, and you basically have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and,
yeah.
you know, find some kind of inspiration, you know, to write to again, you know, and then make another record and try to, you know, dig your way out of
yeah.
the debt. I remember I was like 23 years old, and I was $2 million in debt at the time, you know, and thinking, oh, is this ever going to work? You know,
yeah.
I mean, I love making the music, and I love, you know, being in the band, and I love the presentation and touring around the world. But man, to have that debt looming over your head,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just catastrophic. I don't even know how we did it. Maybe that's why I started drinking.
And making your own wine company, which we are going to talk about later. That's a very good segue. But I do want to take a short little break because I have so much other things that I want to dig in. I'm chatting with the incredibly gifted former Queensryche frontman, singer-songwriter, and Hit Parader's 14th greatest metal vocalist of all time, Jeff Tate. When we come back, we dive more into his incredible vocal prowess, musical versatility, and explore his songwriting process. Stay tuned.
Hey guys, are you loving the show? Do you want to see more of The Scene?
Well, guess what? You can, because The Scene with Doreen is now a weekly segment on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash. The Daily Flash is your daily destination for trending stories, celebrity updates, and industry highlights. And it's now your home to watch The Scene with Doreen. You can turn us on and watch every Wednesday across the country. Check your local times and listings at thescenewithdoreen.com. Yes, welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and coming out of the break, we heard a clip of my incredible guest, Vocal Pyrotechnics, former frontman of Queensryche and multi-award-winning singer-songwriter Jeff Tate. Welcome back, Jeff. Wow. That was your live performance of Take Hold of the Flame, live concert Tokyo back in 84, and you're dancing around, ultimate frontman, and you're holding these insanely high notes while your intonation is impeccable. It's like superhuman.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
Yes. I mean, when you listen back to something like that after all these years, how does that make you feel? Is it surreal?
Yeah. I tour so much and I sing that song almost every night. So. Yeah.
Original key? Do you still do the original key?
I'm just like, I'm so familiar with it now, I could probably sing it in my sleep.
Yeah. You know? Do you do the original key still?
Yeah, I did last night.
Good for you. Yeah, how the? Oh, my God.
If I'm on tour or a long time, I drop it down a half step because it makes it kind of easier for me and for the band to sing along with, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've read you have a 4+ octave range, which is pretty rare in the world of rock music or any music for that matter. Do you know your precise range? I mean, what notes do you top and bottom out? I saw one article, B1, A5 somewhere when I was prepping for our interview. Do you know your range?
No, I don't really pay attention to it, you know.
Yeah, it's just, it's big.
I don't pay attention to statistics, you know, like baseball, football scores, and
yeah,
that kind of stuff. It's I kind of just sing what the song needs, you know. That's kind of my perspective. Mm-hmm. I go for what the song, what the lyrics are trying to say, and the feeling that the song has. You know, some songs are real screamers, and you know, some songs are angry, and some songs are incredibly gentle and soft and fragile. You know,
right. Right. And how do you balance all that, knowing that there are very different vocal demands for each and different almost technique for each of those? And you have to do them all probably in, you know, not even just the same night, but back to back songs. How do you vocally prepare for something like that?
Well, nothing real special. I start out early in the day, you know, just kind of humming, just kind of getting my voice limbered up, and then I hydrate a lot. I drink a lot of water, keep lubricated, you know, and then I always try to do sound check every day and give it about good hour and a half of, you know, singing and playing with the band and adjusting everything. And that kind of gets me ready for the show and also lets me know where I'm at, you know, vocal wise, health wise.
True.
You know, some song I might not be able to do that song tonight. I should probably leave that one out and wait for tomorrow, or you know, that kind of thing.
Yes. You know, are you able to just kind of go on the fly like that, where is the set list is kind of adjustable, like, or is it like really concrete? Like, you know, okay, this is a goes into, this goes into this one, this does this one, we do this like kind of thing in between. Are you kind of more loose about that?
I'd like to think I'm loose about it, but I honestly like the discipline of the repetition of getting a show together and making it just super tight where everything's just turning on a dime.
Yeah.
I like that. I don't like going to shows or in my own show where there's like long spaces of waiting for the song to begin, waiting for people to tune their guitars, or singers talking too much.
I just
can't stand that. Unless they're telling me about the song or what the inspiration for the song was, or some kind of interesting antidote, you know, but just to sort of sit there and like talk with somebody in the front row, I'm not so down with that, you know.
No,
I have done it, I have to say. I did a whole tour where I did an acoustic tour, which was really, really satisfying and very fun to do. And it was done without any monitors. It was just using the floor wedges, kind of old school, you know.
I love that.
And so I could actually hear what people were saying in the audience, and it was so distracting.
People talk. They shouldn't talk
all the time.
They
sit there and make comments, and you know, you can't. You're doing like some very, really gentle thing, you know, and somebody is going, "Queen of the Ride."
Oh no. Or when they sing along and they're off key and you actually can hear them when it's acoustic. They're belting it out louder than you are. That's a little distracting.
We had one guy that was he was a big guy, and he was standing in front row of the stage.
Always
really good, a lot of money to be at the front stage, but he fancied himself a drummer, or else he was just moved to drum, and he was just playing drums that were like, you know, louder than we were, and throwing us all off. I actually had to stop the show and say, ask him not to do that.
Really?
he wasn't good.
That's what makes it even worse. It's the ones that aren't good, and they have to be the loudest always. I never understood that. It's like on a nude beach. It's never the people you want to see that are nude.
That's true.
It's sort of the same. You do have a very theatrical voice for rock. And by theatrical, I mean you're really expressive and emotive with everything. And in vocally, you do like to tap into, you mentioned it, light and heavy, soft versus forte, all in the same song. Again, not even just, you know, in different songs. Do you often write your songs to stretch just to the very limits of your vocal capabilities?
No, never.
Really?
I never think about it.
Yeah, because you have this voice that can do bells and whistles that really only your voice can do. I mean, listening to that clip coming out of break, I can't imagine there are many people that can cover that song like that.
I've heard a lot of people try.
Yeah, again, with the guy playing the drums, probably. He tried very loudly, So,
lately, in the last few years, I've really sort of begun to enjoy going to the occasional karaoke bar.
You do?
And, it's actually for I'm doing scientific research, really. Because while I'm there, I'm studying like all these people doing what they're doing. And there are some people that can sing very well, you know, and do it very well at the karaoke bar. There's a lot of people that sing one note, you know, all the way through the song is
monotone.
And they don't even know that that's is going on. They don't know that that's happening. You know, they can't hear that there are many notes within the melody.
Oh, it's so true. Yeah, it's always, again, the ones that think and they're not, and they just are proud of it. I mean, I give them credit. They are very exuberant in their delivery. They do try. Yeah. And they make...
I used to not like going to those places, but over the last few years, I've had quite a fun time, encouragement from my friends and my wife, and I even got up and sang a couple times at these places. And
it's, do you do your own? Do you do your own stuff, or do you do achy breaky heart or something?
I did Silent Lucidity one night.
Oh
as,
my God.
I think somewhere in Germany. Uh-huh. And we were singing a song, and my wife is filming it, right?
Yeah.
And about halfway through, about 30 people got up and left, you know, during the- and I'm like watching them go out as I'm singing, you know, like this, and she is filming and she's just cracking up, she's shaking the camera like this, yeah.
When you know, was it something I said, you know,
like, yeah, right, that's what I was, that's how I was playing it, you know?
Now did they know it was you when you were doing it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
They're like, you know what, not as good as the original, you know what,
they were having like some kind of hen party, you know, it was know what that is, like, you know, girls night out, or
yes
call them in, so they were all going to get on a bus and they were all hammered and staggering, you know, but just the fact that they were all going at the same time, it was like this mass exodus, you know, your worst nightmare.
Oh yes, you know? As a performer, and then all of a sudden the crickets, cue the crickets.
Yeah, right, a giant hook comes out, you know, grabs you.
Oh well, I give you credit for doing the karaoke though. That takes a lot of courage, especially when you are who you are. And do you ever kind of say, well, you know who I am? Or do you just go up there to see what the reaction's going to be?
Oh, I try my hardest never to say who I am.
Love it. Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially that also gives you a little cushion if you don't have a good night. You don't have to say.
Well, you know, it becomes a bit of a problem because when people know who you are, they're always buying you drinks. You know?
Oh, and, yeah.
So you feel obligated to, you know, hey, thank you, you know, or you know what, your toes down and getting hauled off to a police station or something.
True. I used to work doing DJing in clubs, and they would always buy drinks and send them over. But I knew that if I had more than one, it would be a different kind of mix. And so I would either give them to my friends and kind of sneak them, or I had a pile that were like on the floor, and I would just kind of, because you want the bar to buy, you know, to sell drinks. So, yeah, I was like, get the bar bill up. But, yeah, I wouldn't drink them. I'd pretend.
Yeah, probably a good idea not to. Yeah.
Probably. Do you have any unusual habits or practices that help spark your musical creativity when you are creating?
No. I don't know about habits. No. I think one thing that really helps is doing it every day. You know, sitting down, even if you don't write anything, you just work at it, you know, and given enough time, something will start happening, and then you'll be on a roll, and 6 months later, you'll come out of the studio with something, you know.
Yeah.
You can't stop. You have to kind of keep doing it, you know, every day, at least for me.
Yeah. Do you vocalize every day when you're not touring?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. You keep it loose. Cool.
Yeah. Otherwise, I get way too out of shape, you know, and too becomes such a distant thing that it's hard. Well, at least it takes a few weeks to come back from, you know, inactivity, you know.
It's like an athlete. Definitely like an athlete. You can't just, you know, if you're running a marathon, you can't just give up and not practice or not train. And a lot of people think, oh, it's just your instrument. And people don't realize you carry that instrument with you everywhere you go. You have to be even more vigilant about what you're doing.
Right.
Yeah. So I read early on that you were very interested in symphonic music. And a lot of the rock guests that I've interviewed on the show have really had this passion for classical, like guitarist Steve Vai composed orchestral pieces for the Metropole Orchestra in the Netherlands, Kip Winger, extremely talented classical and Broadway composer. Did you ever consider going down the strictly classical composition path?
Well,
you have the sensibilities for it. You do.
Yes and no. I mean, we've utilized a lot of classical motifs within the context of what we write. And I think that if you look at our material over the years, it's more classical and jazz based influences rather than American blues, you know, which so many rock bands are kind of based in the blues, you know.
Sure.
And ours has been really, really more classical oriented, you know.
Yes.
And later it got into more jazz stylings, but I think classical. Predominantly.
Yes. Well, The Last Action Hero, the one I played in the beginning in the montage for the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, that if that isn't like the classical, you know, the epitome of, you know, infusing that into a rock song, I don't know what is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was a great song. I really do. I mean, how did that song, I mean, I know I'm going off script here, but how did that song come to be? How did you get that soundtrack, and how did that merge happen between that symphonic sound and your sound?
Let's see. Well, Michael Kamen was the composer.
Yes.
And Michael had worked with us as far back as the Warning album on songs like Roads to Madness and No Sanctuary. And then he also composed orchestral parts for Sweet Sister Mary on Operation Mindcrime, mm-hmm. and then Silent Lucidity as well, mm-hmm. The orchestral parts. We worked with Michael on that. And he called us and said, I've got this new movie I'm working on. It's an Arnold Schwarzenegger film, Last Action Hero. Would you guys like to get involved? Would you like to write something for it? Mm-hmm. So we did, and we worked on the song Real World, of course, yes. and with Michael. And he came up to Seattle, and we sat in the studio and for a couple days, having a great time trying different ideas out, and came up with that song. And then we ended up flying down to L.A. and working with him, placing the song within the movie and cutting it up and taking little melodies here and there and putting them throughout the film. And if you listen to the soundtrack of the film as it goes along, you'll hear
yes.
bits and pieces of that song all the way through yes. the album or the soundtrack. It's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And that was my first time working in the film end of things, you know, making that all work was fascinating. We worked at Dave Stewart's studio, you know, the Eurythmics mm-hmm. Writer, and yeah. what a great place that was. And working with Michael again was really fantastic. He's one of the most talented musicians I've ever worked with.
And what a wonderful culmination between the two, and that fusion between it was a beautiful marriage. It really was. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Sure was.
Yes, I'm having a blast talking music with former Queensryche frontman and insanely talented vocalist Jeff Tate. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Jeff's musical legacy, more of his passions, and the surgery that saved his life. Stay right there. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back.
Tired of shopping for furniture and not finding what you want? Concerned about quality, value, or reputation of most online stores? GrossmanFurniture.com is your answer. We've been furnishing homes for 95 years, and we continue to offer our customers the best price every day, guaranteed. We specialize in customizing over 200 leading brands of furniture to fit your style, your home, and your budget. See why we've been the go-to furniture choice in historic Philadelphia for almost a century. Shipping nationwide, coast to coast, our virtual GrossmanFurniture.com showroom makes it easy and comfortable for you to shop online for quality furniture and decor. Check out our exclusive Made in America furniture lines. Visit us online today and allow us to help you make your dream house your dream home. Log on at GrossmanFurniture.com. That's GrossmanFurniture.com.
Well, The Scene with Doreen is back from the other side, and I am your host, Doreen Taylor. I'm lucky to be speaking with former frontman of Queensryche, multi-award-winning singer-songwriter Jeff Tate. That was a clip from his song Another Change by Oblivion featuring Jeff Tate. Jeff, you're still out there making great music, singing your ass off after 35 years in the industry. How do you keep it fresh?
Oh, gosh. Variety, I think, is the key to my life, you know, trying to keep working with different people. The Sweet Oblivion album's a good example of that. I think we've done two albums together now, and we're actually working on the third one right now. It's a group of Italian artists and producers who I met in my travels, and we've made some really interesting stuff. I've been singing with a German group called Avantasia. Mm-hmm. I've done four songs with them over the last couple of years and toured with them too, which is really fun. Just did a show Sweden Rock Festival 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. Mm-hmm. Played with them, and I'm doing some shows coming up in Germany, the big Wacken Festival in August. I'm doing with them, and just kind of variety, you know, working with different people keeps it really interesting for me.
Definitely the spice of life. And you know, you had that signature rocker long hair for many years when people, you know, watch the old music videos of you, and you chose to shave it off, correct, a few years ago?
Yeah.
Was that in solidarity of a family member that was going through?
A close family friend of ours was going through cancer and lost her hair. And so a lot of us who knew her shaved our heads and in kind of a support, you know.
Yeah.
Which she laughed about and got a kick out of.
Oh, definitely.
And,
and
then having it or having the hair gone was kind of refreshing for me, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ride a motorcycle, so it's easier, you know.
It's a good look, I got to say. It's that tougher. It's a cool look. I love it. I really do. Not that the other one was bad. That was hot, too. But this is good. This is a nice evolution.
Yeah, I've been told I have an attractive head.
There you go. Yes, you do. And you're what is it they say? The pinna. Is it the pinna of the ear? The top of the ear. That's like, you know, I remember somebody complimented me in a bar about the pinna. And I was like, really? That's the lamest pickup line I've ever heard. You have nice pinna.
That's next level.
That's next level. I took that number just because I had to. It works, see? Your music is like a collaborative family business. You're very big with having your family involved in various parts of your career. And I know at least one of your daughters followed you into the music business.
Angel, yeah. She's made two albums now. Yeah. Now she's quite good. I didn't even know she was going to do it. And she just handed me a CD one day. I go, what's this? She goes, it's my new CD. Check it out.
Really? Now, you know the dirty underbelly of the industry. We were talking a little bit about it even in the beginning and how tough it is. Were you supportive of her getting into the business like you did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm very supportive of her doing it. Although, you know, she kind of does things on her own. And I don't have any, you know, I don't have anything invested in it. It's just all her. Which I think is the best way to be. You know, she stands on her own two feet and makes her own music. And it's a lot of it's really, really, I think, great. Yeah. You know, I was actually quite surprised, you know. Of course, she was the one that always was more interested in music of my kids. She was the one that listened, you know, and she wanted to discover my record collection one day. So I just sat her down and said, well, here, start with ABBA and go to Zappa, you know, and just soak it all up. And which she did. She really, she can like rattle off some pretty strange songs from, you know, the deep cuts of certain artists that I don't even listen to anymore, but she found inspirational, you know.
Right.
Crazy.
Right. Well, the apple does not fall far from the tree. And you obviously imparted some of or all of what you've had onto her. And they're like sponges. They take it all. And good for her. Good for her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do briefly want to say that you underwent open heart surgery for an aortic valve replacement in 2022. First and foremost, how are you feeling?
I feel great.
You look great. You sound great.
I feel amazing.
Good.
I didn't even know I felt bad because I just sort of adjusted to how inefficient my heart was, you know, working, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. And I just thought it was kind of normal for, you know, man my age to, you know, be out of breath, you know, walking upstairs and that kind of thing. And kind of a funny story. I, you know, after COVID, you know, we all gained a lot of weight, right?
Guilty as charged.
Well, you know, all you do is sit around and drink and watch TV and, you know.
Yeah.
So my wife looked at me one day and she said, can you fit into your rock and roll pants? I said, oh, I'm sure I can. I tried them. Nope. And she goes, okay, I'm putting you on a diet. So we were dieting and working out. And for extra protein, she was sprinkling on these chia seeds on my yogurt in the morning, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I went to the hospital and the doctor's checking me out because I had breathing problems. And I was like, I felt horrible. And right. He goes, well, I got some good news and bad news. Well, the good news is you had an anaphylactic shock reaction to something you ate. What did you eat this morning? We figured out it was chia seeds. Oh. He goes, okay, don't ever do that again. You're allergic to them. Mm-hmm. I said, what's the bad news? He goes, you're going to have to go in for heart surgery, like right away.
Wow. So they found, thanks to the chia seeds, they found this and saved your, chia seeds saved your life. That sounds like a new song you need to write.
Yeah. And I was, you know, I had never had any kind of issues like that before. And
wow. That was your first time in the hospital? Is that true?
It was. Yeah? It was my first time in the hospital. I've never been, you know, I've never been injured or broken a bone or anything like that. I've always been pretty healthy, you know. Mm-hmm. And this was like a kind of a shock to me. It was a shock to me having to deal with the medical industry for the first time.
You thought the music industry was bad. Wait till you try the medical industry.
Yeah. Well, I ended up going to Germany and getting the work done there. Because there you don't, it's not like you just pay a price and you go in and have the operation done. You know,
right. No red tape.
Insurance stuff you have to deal with. And it was really great care. And I had the number six surgeon in the world who did the operation. And he was amazing. Oh. And he pioneered this new kind of, you know, they used to have to split you open, you know, and take your heart out and thing. And, and now they make this like incision that's like this long, right?
Yeah.
And he pioneered that procedure. And they, you know, reach in and grab your heart and set it on your chest and they start working away on it, you know, and then they fix it and put it back in.
Yeah. You know? Oh, man.
So now I know what it's like to have another man's hands inside of me.
You know, if I edit this and just use that as a sound clip, you might be very disappointed in what comes out of that. I will be fair. I promise. I will not do any creative editing. Did you need
to go viral?
Yeah, it could. There you go. For the wrong reasons, my friend.
For the rest of your life.
Did you need to make any really big lifestyle changes after all of that? Or did you kind of just go back to what you were doing?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily that my lifestyle was causing the problem. I was born that way. I had a deformed valve and it just kind of wore out. In fact, you know how some, well, all heart valves have this kind of weird three flap kind of thing that opens up, you know, like this. And mine only had one, right? Oh. So over time, and being the age I'm at, it's sort of calcified and got to a point where it just was not opening all the way.
Yeah.
So they put like the most high tech one that's available in there now. So I'm just set to go. I could probably with as long as I'm exercising and taking decent care of myself, I'm set for 100, you know.
Yes, and no chia seeds. That is the one lifestyle change you need to make, no chia seeds.
But I gotta tell you, I just thought, you know, I adjusted to the fact that I was unable to be as physical as I used to be in my younger days, you know. And I just thought it was normal.
Well, but they tell you it's normal. People always say, oh, it's just you're getting older. Don't worry about it. This is just
older,
normal.
Yeah. And things are just now.
Yes.
No, it's not really like that. I feel 15 years younger. I mean, I'm running upstairs and it's crazy. You know, I just have, I feel physically 15 years younger.
Oh, that's great. It's like you said, you don't know until you know, and then you feel it. It's like with eye surgery, when they do the cataract surgery, and we have as humans a way to adjust, and everything is to a new normal. And then when it is gone, then we're like, oh, that's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I'm having a wonderful conversation, and I am so happy that he is still here with us with former Queensryche frontman and multi-talented singer-songwriter Jeff Tate. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jeff's new passions of travel and wine and wrap it all up with what the visionary singer and artist is bringing to the world next. Stay tuned.
Looking to get your brand to millions of people without wasting money on platforms that don't deliver your message to the right customers? Well, worry no more. Hi, I'm Doreen Taylor, and I'm so proud to announce that The Scene with Doreen is now syndicated across the good old USA. My show is one of the fastest rising new radio shows in the country and a great way to reach a large audience and deliver your message to potential customers nationwide. People hate commercials, but now they don't have to because we create ads that are as great as your business. Become part of this incredible journey with us and let us make your business the celebrity on The Scene with Doreen. Join The Scene with Doreen family. Visit us at thescenewithdoreen.com or call us at 856-625-2375. That's 856-625-2375.
Hi, my name is Jeff Tate. I'm a singer-songwriter and a world traveler. In recent years, I've started a new endeavor. Since 2007, I've been releasing wine under my own label. My brand is called Insania. I started out making wine from grapes grown in the Columbia Valley in Washington State. And now, the latest vintages of Insania are being made in the Baden-Kaiserstuhl region in southern Germany. Insania. Come travel the world. One glass at a time.
Welcome back to the show, Jeff. We heard coming out of break one of your, I don't want to say newest, but your latest passion projects, your brand new wine label called Insania. And I need the echo on me because that was awesome.
Thanks for noticing that.
I love it. Oh, yes. I always hear the little touches. Yes. I read that this passion of making wine started as a Boy Scout at age 14.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
you could get a merit badge.
Dandelion wine, yeah.
You could get a merit badge for creating a beverage or like a food product, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was all about collecting merit badges at that age. Mm-hmm. And I made my first batch of wine. It was dandelion wine, mm-hmm. kind of a folk wine. And I didn't drink wine at the time. I'd never even tasted wine. But my adult parents and grandparents tried it and said, well, yeah, it's very drinkable. Yeah, it's surprising. You made it out of dandelions out of the front yard, huh?
It's edible, yes. Did you really take the dandelions from your front yard and make the wine?
Yeah, actually my grandmother's front yard and backyard. Yeah.
Really? Wow, I got something to do next season. I've been mowing those babies down. I need to make some good libations out of it.
Yeah, you got to maybe have a bumper crop. You know, you could make some very good wine out of that.
Yes. Know? Now, you just, did someone teach you that? I mean, where did that knowledge and passion come from?
I read it out of a book.
Out of a book.
And I just followed the directions. It's really pretty simple, you know. In fact, winemaking and beer making, it's not hard. It's just it's a procedure you follow, you know. Mm-hmm. And you just have to do that and be consistent with it, and you know, there you go.
Yes. Are you
of course, to make you know, money at it, you know, you have to create a certain amount of it, and then you have to market and sell it. And it's one thing to make wine. It's very similar to music. It's one thing to make music. It's another thing to sell it, you know. Same with wine. You can make really great wine, but it's a whole other ball game when you try to sell it and mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. convince people to buy it, you know.
Yes.
It's very hard, very hard.
Yes. Well, are you a red or white guy?
Well, I like white for breakfast and red for every other meal.
Smart. There you go, my kind of guy. All right. We're running out of time, but I do want to also talk about your backstage pass travel. Because it is something that is so unique and so cool, where your fans can also, with, you know, Wanderlust, they can travel Italy with you for a week. That's really unique.
Yeah, it is pretty unique. And I have to say, very, very fun and satisfying, not only on my end of things, but I think also on the people that have participated in it. It's a great trip. Yeah. And a lot of people are kind of reticent about going to different places, especially overseas, and this is a great way to experience Italy, for example. And you don't have to think about it; you just show up, and we got you. You know, we take you around, take you everywhere, introduce you to some of our favorite places and places that we think are just amazing. And it's kind of a no-brainer. And all the whole time you're surrounded by music. We're singing songs. We're eating in the finest restaurants. We're going on through the wine vineyards. We're learning stuff. We're mm-hmm. going to archaeological world UNESCO sites. We have a trip in Germany that we'll be spend the week in our winery there, and people get to experience that and participate if they want. They can pick grapes. They can participate in the crush and the bottling experience. They see how that works.
Yeah.
We have an Italy trip that is very popular in Tuscany.
Mm-hmm.
We have this big villa on a mountaintop with a swimming pool, and it's beautiful. And we have a chef that makes Italian food every night for us.
I'm getting
go
hungry.
Out during the day and experience all these little day trips and these beautiful Tuscan villages. Mm-hmm. And then we come back at night and we have cocktails by the pool and then music at night. And it's fantastic. We do trips in Italy, Ireland, Rio de Janeiro, Crete, Greece, and Germany, France, of course.
Wonderful. Now, this is a twofer question. One, did you ever think of maybe filming all this and making this a Netflix series? I'm just saying, and I want royalties if it happens, because I think this sounds like it's got the makings of a really good, totally immersive experience.
It is very strange. You get 30 people all together for a week. In a villa in Tuscany, and bizarre things happen.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's got some good makings there. And that kind of leads me to the other odd question I have. But what happens if you get somebody that is just a little too fan crazy on the trip with you? Do you, like, you know, somehow source these people out? Do you kind of do background checks before they come with you?
Yeah, we have kind of a vetting process we go through. And we have a contract they have to sign, of course, that has some very weird clauses, which we always have to explain to people what they are. But it's based upon past experiences with certain people that have gotten a little bit too crazy.
Yes.
As they say.
Yes. I couldn't imagine, you know, that you wouldn't have experienced that at least once already.
Yeah. You know, again, you get 30 people, you know, set up at some pub in Ireland, you know, for a week, and, you know, it's going to have, things are going to happen.
Yes. And I do want to touch, a book is coming out. You're working on a book right now?
Yeah, I finished it. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of re-editing process right now, going through it and touching stuff up. And
yeah,
it's tricky, you know, writing a book. There's so much that you can say, but there's probably a lot that you shouldn't say. And I'm at the point now where I'm looking back and reading some of it and going, I don't know if that's legal. If I can say that.
It'll sell copies, though. Just saying.
Yeah,
there's a fine line.
I spend the rest of my life in lawsuits, you know.
That's true. Yes. Yeah, it's a fine dance there, a fine line that you have to kind of figure it out. But I am looking forward to reading it now. But I want to hear the unabridged version. I want the real version.
Yeah, I might have to do like a series of readings from the book, you know, live.
Yes. Listen to your voice.
Putting it out in print.
And a Christmas album is on the horizon, too?
Yeah, actually, I got some of it here. I've been working on it little bit today, which is so strange that here we are in June, but
always.
I'm singing Christmas songs, you know.
Always. People don't realize that usually you're writing or recording Christmas songs when it is the least Christmassy. It's like, you know, heat waves.
It's sunny and 78 degrees outside, and I'm in a dark studio singing about Frosty the Snowman.
True. Now, you're doing the classics? Are you doing originals? Are you kind of doing your own spin on these?
Yeah, it's a kind of a combination of both.
Good.
But it's kind of an international Christmas with songs from all over the world, you know.
Love it. And I do want people to visit you, Jeff Tate, jefftate.com, to visit all the things, learn about all the things we're talking about, because you have a wonderful website, see what you're doing, follow you on your tour, your solo career. And we just have we're down to one last question. It's the one that I know everybody's on their minds. I know that you've had legal battles between you and Greenzreich, and it's been talked about ad nauseum, so I don't think we really need to go there. But most people want to know, now that some time has passed and the industry is all about reboots and reunions right now, will there ever be a Queensryche reunion with Jeff Tate on lead vocals?
Well, you know, I'd never say never, you know, really. I think the life's too short to have, you know, too many strong opinions about things. We'll see. We'll see.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. And you're open to anything, and that's the way you should be in life. And
I am a very open-minded person. Yeah.
I can tell. Even in this time, this hour that we spent, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I've learned some great things. I've learned that I can go to Italy with you and not be too crazy. And I can get some incredible wine. And you just keep making great music, and you're just a pleasure. And I think you need to do a little more spoken word things too, because that voice is incredible.
thank you, Doreen.
Thank you, and thank you for spending a little time with me today. And anytime
My
you have
pleasure.
Anything,
I'm glad we connected.
Me too. And anytime you want to come back and promote anything, like the Christmas album, you please, you know, anytime you have an open mic here.
Definitely, I'll All take right. you up on that. Thank you very much.
Yes, take care. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you to my incredible guest today, Jeff Tate. And thank you again for tuning in to The Scene with Doreen. I'm here each week across the country bringing you the best interviews from the entertainment world and beyond. Get connected with me on social media and on our official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And make sure to tune in next week so you can find out what's going on. Bye.